No,
I mean, my guess is I'd be happy to...
That letter from the reviser really said what Tam Cook said?
We had all personal government dropping it.
I thought it sort of sounded like they would, they would be dropping it, but...
But again, I don't know if we...
Order, Senator Coghill is here, Senator Sturgalewski, and Senator Fisher, I think, should be on his way.
I don't see Tam, do I?
No, she was a little bit late the other day, so maybe hopefully she's on her way. Oh, I'm fine, thank you. Okay, and on your desk should be this information to sort of summarize what we did Monday morning. And so we sort of want to go over that and be sure that...
We held two open meetings.
Yeah, number four we amended. And then number six is the anti-discrimination one, and that's the one we decided we'd come back with. We made some changes in the purpose, which is attached to that summary. And then also the letter of intent, which dealt with the concern that the utilities had. And then also we have a letter regarding the purpose clause, and I think we might want to discuss that a little bit. To me, that's not quite exactly neither what we wanted from the reviser, or that wasn't the way we interpreted it. So let's go back to the amendments then, and take up the House Amendment number six. That was the one regarding the anti-discrimination. Let's see, has everybody been able to see if we can find that, okay?
Yeah.
Where it says, person may not in any way favored or discriminated against with respect to municipal employment because of the person's race, color, sex, creed, national origin, or other, unless otherwise contrary to law, because of the person's political opinions or affiliations. And that was a concern. That is the existing law. Yes, Senator Sturgalewski.
Can Tam come up?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Through the chair. Tam, you're going to do some checking on this one for us, I think. No, Tam there and Peter up here. Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. Tam was going to give us some.
You asked for some suggested language. I had a chance to confer with Representative Gollin. During our meeting yesterday, I suggested that we insert after the word to law, contrary to law, or in the case of an appointed policy-making position, that would allow a mayor to appoint people to certain high-level positions. That does not get to the concern expressed by Senator Coghill that the mayor ought to be able to appoint certain non-policy-making employees, such as tax assessors and municipal clerks.
They're in part of his, Madam Chair.
Yes.
They're still part of his team.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm trying to do, is that we want to preserve the fact is that the municipal clerk serves, in most instances, serves at the pleasure of the mayor. And we want to preserve that. And
okay.
That's, you know, I'm not... The thing is that when we put this amendment number six in, we put in only part of what was in the old law.
Mm-hmm.
The old law was quite specific about a person may not be appointed to or removed from municipal office or in any way favored or discriminated against with respect to a municipal position because of personal race, color, or creed, or otherwise, contrary to law because of person's political opinion. I'm trying to do is to strike to those, the team that the mayor might want to bring in. And I don't believe that some of them are not policy, but they're mm-hmm. but they're part of the policy team.
Right. One approach would be if this committee wishes to accept a version of the House's amendment, one possibility would be to list the particular function, the particular offices that you wish to include. For example, you could put in what I suggested, or in the case of an appointed policy-making position, and also include the municipal clerk, municipal tax assessor, but that would require you to itemize the people that are not policymaking.
That's not good.
That you want to include. Otherwise, probably the thing to do is to decline to accept this amendment, because if the thrust of your desire is to free up the appointing official to have control on the basis, and to consider political opinions as part of his appointing criteria, then this amendment would certainly thwart that. Existing law precludes that sort of thing also, and is in fact much stricter than this amendment.
What is, oh, you mean the one that's in Title 29 now? And it, let's see, Scott here, Scott, remind me.
Madam Chairman, could we just put in there somewhere other than employment, in the definition that employment does not include or mean that staff positions or, I don't know how to get to it.
Policy making.
Well, she brought up the subject that the policy, Madam Chairman, the policy is not necessarily clerk, not necessarily policy, but it's part of the policy too.
We could include something such as members of the mayor's immediate staff, if those are the people that you have in mind, and exempt them from application of this amendment.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Anytime you try to write this in, that creates another area of some ambiguity because of the differences in our local governments. I guess my point, and perhaps I don't feel as strongly, but I would go back to what we've written or what was in the governor's bill and accept that rather than, in other words, to reject the House amendment on it. I just think that has some real connotations by even being there to put in. They should not be fired just for that, but there are other mechanisms, say for classified employees. There are a lot of the whole body of law dealing with employee rights, and my gut feeling is that this phrase in here does not in fact bring the kind of protection to employees that it doesn't add a great deal to all the things that are out there to protect employees' rights.
I tend to agree with Senator Drzewski. You've got your prohibition in the Constitution. Most municipal ordinance, most municipalities have a personnel ordinance that carries it into a broader spectrum. This, I don't know whether we need to have this there, and we'll just have to hammer it out when we get to conference, I guess, with the House.
So the feeling of the committee then is to not to adopt the
amendment. Okay. I guess just the one comment. The Attorney General's office and their feeling is both that with regard to race and sex and so forth, that there are constitutional protections, although they cannot understand why one would wish to take those out of the municipal code. They further commented that there was an opportunity, and they had a Supreme Court decision that they were referring to, where people whose jobs are specific to policy and politics would not be affected by this, and implied that people whose jobs were not so might, as you indicate, have some protections. But when I forced the issue of what about, and I keep coming back to the single case of the people that I deal with personally who say to me, they don't like the way I think, so I got fired from my laborer's job. It's not free speech, it's not like you made an inflammatory statement, it's just they know I'm a this or they know I'm a that, and so I lost my job with the city. What do I do? And well, the answer is you go to civil court and you litigate and try to show that you were discriminated against, and if you can show race or sex or national origin and so forth, basically, as much as I would like to see it in the law, I don't disagree with your feeling that that it's covered in other places, notably the Constitution. But political opinions and affiliations are specifically not covered. And I guess I just want to make one last comment, if I may, that I think they should be. And I agree that with the political appointee, there's a need for an exemption. However, the comment that was made to me by the Assistant Attorney General, I thought was pretty interesting, and that was the gut reaction that the municipalities had a right to political patronage. And I just think that's what this implies by actively taking it out of the law. Although I don't mean to imply that it would be misused or anything, but a person could take the interpretation that that was an intentional step on the part of the legislature to remove this from the law, and that, of course, is what's occurring. And I would personally like to see some method adopted that kept those protections, you know, de jure and not implied, and especially when it comes to the ones that are not covered by the Constitution. If I didn't know for a fact that it happens, I wouldn't bring it to your attention. It's just that I do. And I think there should be something in the law that says it's not right.
Madam Chair, I think that, you know, this is an issue. That's why you have conference committees, and we know that's going to go now. But I would hope that there could be, obviously would have to be on both sides, a little bit more thinking about this question of the ability to appoint. And so it's more a wording problem than a prohibition. So I think some creative thought on this might solve the problem.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, Senator Sturgis.
All righty, so that takes care of then all the amendments that the House had presented to us. And from my recollection, we have adopted all of them except six. And number four, we had changed, reduced from 600 to 400. Okay, then the next item that we had was the proposed amendment number 1A, which is attached, the new revised one is attached right there to that following information. And so you may want to, yeah.
Did you get that? You got those?
Your
mom has one for you, then.
Is that, 1A, Cook, the one that we were discussing last time?
Yeah,
yes.
The revision one.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay. So I'll give you a minute to review that, and attached behind that is the note from the revised, or second page behind that, which I think we should probably review, too, and we should discuss that.
The therefore portion. Then it was going to, we determined to cut out all the rest.
No, we just...
The purpose of the legislature revise and reorganize the municipal code to permit
mm-hmm.
Local government to operate more effectively.
That's what I have written down.
Well, we were going to delete the rest.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
To the period is what I have.
Okay.
Is that what you have?
All right.
And then it starts out, except as expressly provided, and then it picks up with the legislature and goes all the way down.
Oh, we added except as provided. The legislature does not intend.
And then next, the last line, it's by this act and to increase or reduce the authority.
I think that's what we had talked about.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's according to my notes list. Someone else has something else.
That's exactly correct.
Bob, had your attorney looked at this before they left?
Yes, he
Those changes in it?
Are okay.
Well, they were discussed in there yesterday.
Mm-hmm. You see this?
Yes.
You wrote.
Hopefully she looked at her. Don't put her on the spotlight.
I see nothing wrong with that.
Okay,
you're going to turn yellow or something, okay?
What is the direction then?
I'll move that we adopt the amendment.
One A.
Not you.
Okay, is there any objections to the adoption of Amendment 1A? Now, before we go on, then I'd like you to turn to that very last page of that little handout that you have, and let's discuss the letter from the reviser, because that was a question. Yeah, just keep doing that. It's the very last page of that.
you want to read that, and you want to be sure, because we were concerned about whether this purpose would stay in there and how long it would remain, so. You want to review that.
When the legislature enacts a purpose clause as a part of our act, our procedures after adjustment include instructing the statute publisher to include at least a cross-reference to the purpose clause at appropriate locations. Where do they put the purpose clause in? It's set out in an editor's note in the statutes. The treatment of a purpose clause depends on the circumstances, but it is our policy to always make it possible for a user of the statutes to find the clause in the temporary and special act by, if it is not set out in the note.
I thought what we had discussed was having it set out in the note.
Tam, does this make sense to you?
What he's doing is essentially saying that in most cases we're going to set it out in the note, but then again we might not.
Yeah, so we need some direction to him then, if that's the feeling of the committee, don't you think?
I don't know whether the
decision may be in this final.
Right. The problem is that in this case the revisor of statutes has a certain statutory authority and a freedom. There's an editorial prerogative that exists. Mitchie Company also drops out revisor's notes when they get old occasionally. So occasionally what happens is a pamphlet gets printed and an editor somewhere along the line has taken an action. And so I don't know that this committee is actually in control of that situation. I talked my discussion with Mr. Deardorff about this particular situation. He indicated to me that he thought that the purpose clause would probably be printed in full underneath the chapter heading for the municipal code.
I would like to see that happen. Mm-hmm. And if it takes another amendment to the act for a writer in the act that the purpose clause be included in the session clause, and that it be noted in the at least the first two reprints of the Mitchie. Mm-hmm. Now we can do that by a letter from the chairman of the committee.
I don't know how we can do it, but we want to do it.
Do it.
It's important. That's why we're going through this exercise. If it weren't, we wouldn't do it.
We don't want it to drop out.
Well, I think Mr. Walker has a comment. Maybe he has some insight here.
Yes, may I refer you to an instance that they didn't do it, which is very important. If you'll refer to Title 46, Chapter 40, that's the Coastal Management Act. When that bill was originally enacted, there was in fact a two section
a purpose
thing. They dropped that and reprinted that then in the special acts under Chapter 84. And in that case, there never was any footnotes or cross references, and there's none there now.
How long ago was that done?
That was in 1977.
Madam Chairman,
yes.
If we specifically instruct them to put it into the session laws, then if we say two prints of Mitchie, we want it in the footnotes, full. By that time, it's going to have served its purpose. So by that time, I will have rewritten it by amendments a couple of times in a way.
How do we do that, Tam? The committee feels that we want it there for a period of time.
Deardorff's assurance that it will be there.
That's right, yes.
I think probably the best thing would be for you to talk personally with Mr. Deardorff. And if there is going to be a problem, if he's not willing to give you an assurance that's satisfactory to you, then the second step that you might consider is going ahead in the statute and attempting to give it a codification number on your purpose clause. And that would be the second thing we'd try. Now, of course, the revisor of statutes has authority to renumber. So it might be that even that would be a problem, but I rather doubt that it would be. I think Mr. Deardorff just needs to know that in this case it's important to the committee and that you probably will have no difficulty getting his assurance.
A concurrent resolution to that.
Well, you wouldn't even need to do that. I suspect a personal phone call from the committee chair would be all that's necessary. But if you are still concerned, then what I would do is when we prepare the CS is to give the purpose clause a codification number rather than putting it, treating it as a temporary law section.
Madam Chair, I would request that you call, ask for, you know, the assurance, and then ask for a letter and explain the importance of the issue. I mean, that's, we're doing it for a very specific purpose, and ask that in this case that we have a letter and say we would prefer not to use a codification number on it, but we would like something in writing that can also be part of the record. Now, I don't know if he'll do that. If he doesn't, I think we should go ahead and put the a codification number when you rewrite it. That would be my recommendation.
Okay, all right. So, well, why don't we go ahead and take care of the rest of the changes or consider changes that we wanted to do with the bill, and then we'll just hold it over again on
Thursday.
Well, you can just
go ahead. We can act on it, and that can be taken care of. That's just a direction.
But if it requires a codification, then does
that's
that
just
mean
the number. That's just how you write up the new. That's how you write up the
If you decide that you want me to do that, you can go ahead and pass the bill out if you choose to, and then just tell me that I am to wait a call from your office as to how to treat the purpose clause.
It's just a question of whether it's given a number or not.
That's right.
All right. Okay. Is there any further discussion on the advisors? Okay. Enough. All right. Then let's go back. We also do have a proposed letter of intent there on the third page that you have with your handout for today. That addresses two of the four changes that the Utilities Commission had some concerns with. And Scott, have you had a chance to see those two? Yeah, looks like you have that. Okay, I'll give everyone a chance to review that. And you may want to look at the concerns that there were two that we took up, and then the other two.
Madam Chair, if it's appropriate, I would move that we include a letter of intent as proposed in your draft.
Okay. Is there any objections to that letter of intent? If not, then so ordered.
On that letter of intent.
Okay. All right. Then I did want to give the committee a chance, if they did want to address the two additional concerns that the utilities had brought up regarding utility regulation and the extraterritorial jurisdiction. And I don't know if you want to discuss those or if anybody wants to take any actions on those two additional concerns.
Have they been brought up to the committees and Madam Chairman in the rewrite of Title 29? Had they been done through the process?
Maybe we can
ask.
If
so, why were they left out, Pam?
This particular issue, my recollection is that it's been brought up consistently with every version of the bill and, in fact, got incorporated into one version of the bill. I believe the Senate, I'm not certain, but I believe it was a Senate CNRA committee for SB 180 did accept at least partially some of that language, but that's the only version that adopted it, and it's been rejected pretty consistently over the years since.
Okay, so did you want any further information on that or discuss it?
No, I don't think so. I think I'd just assume if it's a compelling thing, where we can do it with another bill another time down the line.
Okay.
Did Bob and Mr. Plummer's deal get taken care of in that word of letter of intent? Is that not letter of intent?
The purpose?
The purpose clause, did that take care of our...
Madam Chair, I don't... The basic issue, which is state supremacy, so stated, has not been taken care of what we have done. But it's my understanding that, you know, that at least one of the companies had three approaches. One would have been similar to Mr. Plummer's language or the language presented by Mr. Weaver. Second, at least by Mr. Weaver's company, was the letter of intent, and his attorney, of course, worked with that. And the third would have, I mean, the second would have been the purpose, and the third would have been a letter of intent, and the decision has been made to do it by the purpose clause with the additional insurance, which is very important, to have that shown in the, by the reviser, as a part of, you know, the history, so that they would have a basis to act on, and that would take a major change.
In the handout that Mr. Weaver gave, page 3, Paul, he asks that we might do this language here.
Right, as she has, yeah.
Have you got this?
I don't know that I do.
I think that, Madam Chairman, that we get ourselves into a position where that, I think that Scott brought it out, I think Pete's brought it out, that we're getting to a position where that we put something major in the bill, or what's it going to do to the bill by the time it gets, they're going to have a, but on the other hand, I think that we have a charge that we have to make sure that everything is right. When we rewrite something, that we don't do it halfway, where that we create a myriad of problems in the wake of our doing something right or doing something wrong. And I'm concerned about the chain of events, and yet we know that there's a state, that the state has rights over local governments, and yet in the Constitution we have a broad sweeping power that we try to keep government as close to the local level as possible, I don't know just what the interpretation would be on this as to if we put this something like this. Have you seen this, Peter?
Yes, sir.
We get this in there. Are we talking about doing the same thing with the municipal code as they did once before, get it up the governor's desk, and it won't go any further? Do we know that with this state supremacy thing?
I think we have a,
well,
it's a clue,
we don't have the state supremacy thing in
now.
No.
We do not have it in there now.
No.
I don't know if
have
we
you,
asked
have
Scott.
Have you had to deal with this in the Title 29 at all, Ben?
The issue has come up at various points during the work on this particular bill, and in every case, I believe, the committees that have worked on the bill have elected not to address the question in this piece of legislation.
Would you like to get Scott's Burgess's fees sent to Casio, or can you remember from the other one?
I'd like to see it in there, except that I'm just wondering if it has a effect on doing it, and or if we need to put this in as a separate legislation and go with it down the line on its own merit.
That's where the committee could look at that. Have something from the committee for a separate piece of legislation. If we wanted to do it separately.
I think I'd like to put it in there. We're going to have a conference committee anyway.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I will not support putting it in. It'll absolutely totally kill the bill. It absolutely will totally kill the bill. Municipal League, in my opinion, and I'm not speaking Municipal League, but the municipalities, if you'll read carefully the wording, it really would take away, again, that tension, that balance that exists between municipalities and the state, and that has, but I think way back to the Constitution, was maximum local government, and yet, you know, the balance is there. It has not been tested in the court. That does not mean it will not be tested in the court, but to put it in changes the equity balance significantly by stating it, and what the attempt has been is to, if you will, maintain the status quo. I'm not saying that that's not, as development proceeds in the state, as we move forward, that there may not be a need for further clarification, but to put it in this piece of legislation you might just as well say it's not going to go. I've been around this issue too long, and I've heard too much testimony in the past when I was active. I've not been active in this for a couple of years, but I think those equities are still the same. Let's go back to, we won't go into the details, but I don't know, Senator Fisher, you probably.
Madam Chair, if I may follow up on it, I too would be a no vote. And I have a hunch that Senator Ferguson would also be no. And it's sort of beyond just, you know, what we do in committee. That is, as I said last time, I think it would be such a basic step designed to deal with such a major issue that we haven't really addressed, it simply it is not proper to bring in at this point, because it would not only derail the bill, it would just blow it up, I think. Just as we had with 180 3 years ago.
Madam Chairman, that's my point. My point is that I think that somewhere along the line, we can't put our heads in the sand. One of these days, we're going to have to face that issue in the legislature or in the courts. We might just as well face it, but I don't. If the consensus of the opinion of my colleagues on the committee is that it would jeopardize the bill, I won't push it.
Madam Chair? I think that it would be very appropriate, as we discussed last time, to agree to pursue this during the interim and hold some hearings on this whole issue and maybe go to different parts of the state and hear from industry, from municipalities, from some of these coastal management districts, and so on, and deal with this issue directly. I would hope that that way we could at least face up to the problem that some of these companies are bringing to us and at least indicating that they have troubles.
Madam Chair,
yes,
I have scheduled in Senate resources and working toward getting a work program also to bring the committee along. We're having, Senator Coghill, just a comment on this. We're having on the 20th or 22nd, I'm not sure of the date, a hearing on the coastal zone bill that Senator Fahrenkamp has introduced that would bring back more control to the state after the Alive decision, which says took away some of the input we had. I'm not saying that bill would pass, but there are a number of issues out there dealing with the authority of the coastal resource service areas, dealing with the relationship of the municipalities to the state, along with the hearing on that, and we'll be learning from it. We've also got two planning sessions, one on April Fool's Day and the other on the following Wednesday, where we're bringing in the major Fed players, and that'll be the Land Use Planning Council, the two advisory councils, the Wildlife, Fish and Wildlife, Park Service, BLM, state agencies, DOT, the whole thing, looking at what we're creating in a sense with the planning of these multiple agencies and their interrelationship. And that's the kind of beginning thoughtful approach I would like to take to this issue, as opposed to changing the equities in a bill here where we don't know what's going to happen out there. It's sort of like you push it here and things come up here. And how much, you know, authority does this say? We've got communities that go all the way from the very rural areas to sophisticated communities that have exercised and worked out a good relationship with state agencies. And all of those become changed if we go one way or another. So I'm really aware of the problem, because we don't want to cause kind of, in some cases, let's face it, almost blackmail situations where development can't take place unless very, very stringent things are met. I think wanting to develop the state, I think we've got a role there. We can't just let that kind of thing go on. I think we have to be aware of it. But here, it's just not, in my opinion, not the place. So I agree, I guess, with you, Senator Fisher. We need
to address your concerns, Senator Paul Gillen.
I agree with you. I think it's an issue that we can't put our head in the sand any longer, we have to deal with it. And so we should certainly look at some legislation that would...
You want to move, your motion to move?
Madam Chair, let me see if there's anything further on, yes, Senator Sturzewski?
We asked Doug to go back to the drawing boards with his fiscal note and take a look at that. Did you reevaluate it in terms of the 87-88 impact? You still want to hold to that? Again, this is not to put it down where it can't be affected, but you, I thought we're going to...
Yes.
Take a look at it.
Doug Griffin from Community Regional Affairs. I did get a chance to talk just briefly. We've been running around regarding budget the last couple of days with Deputy Commissioner Smith, and he has not gotten back to me on that or on how he wanted to check with his superiors too. So I'm afraid I don't have a response on that fiscal note, but I think again, the feeling I got was that we might be willing to address that in the Finance Committee if it gets referred there and be able to deal with it at that level, since they would be the ones that would really be concerned about that.
Madam Chair,
yes,
possibly this committee might suggest that Finance take a particular pay particular attention to this, to this item, and with the view of reducing the fiscal note.
Okay. Anything further to be discussed on 142? Let me ask, is there anyone else here that would like to testify on 142?
Madam Chair? I move that the amendments that we've prepared be formed into a committee substitute, and I would move the committee substitute with a letter of intent with clarification of the revisor's statute and individual recommendations.
Okay. Is there any objections?
Objection.
Okay. If not, that takes care of that.
Madam Chair, this goes next to Judiciary.
And we also had scheduled Senate Bill number 48, and that's Senator Ferguson's bill, and we had talked to Mike Scott, and he said he would be here, and he's not here, so maybe we'll see if there's other people that do have testimony for the bill, and then we'll hold it over until we do have someone from the sponsor here. Is there someone here that was interested in testifying on Senate Bill number 48?
Okay.
You gotta
be real careful.
Okay. Pass that to you.
I would hope not. You've signed this one before.
Here we go again.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I can tell you guys are plotting against us here.
I think
some of you maybe were here for Senate Bill 69, and that's what they were caucusing about, the proposed amendments. Senator Coghill, you want to speak to it for just a minute?
We've got some work to do on that because
on what? Senate Bill 69.
That second section in there is in that speaks to it in the negative. So.
Okay, there was a couple, just to bring everyone up to date, there was a couple of places that Senator Coghill had some problems with when we first heard the bill, and he thought he had some proposed amendments, but...
I got them.
Do you want them today?
No, we don't. We had scheduled it. We changed it for Thursday. Yes, because I didn't anticipate getting out of 142 until about 5 minutes to 5 today. So, okay, anything further to come before the committee?
Oh, you're not going to take up the other one because Fergie's not here.
Yeah, Ferguson's not here.
Move adjourned.
Okay.